this is Shauna Nyquist. Welcome to another episode of our new podcast. In just a minute, I'm going to introduce you to my friend, Angela Davis. She is absolutely fantastic. She is a person who inspires me so much, who teaches me so much. She's one of the ways that you can describe her work is she's a fitness evangelist. And I mean that in both ways. She's an evangelist for a lifestyle of fitness, and she's an evangelist about things of Christ in the context of fitness. And it's this fascinating thing, and she'll explain it a little bit more to you. But she's been a person who has really helped me move forward in a couple key areas of my life. If you know me at all, you know that the fitness part of life is really not my best thing. And that for a long time, I've really kind of segmented kind of that body and soul thing where I live in my mind and my feelings. And that's more comfortable for me than confronting some of the hard things about maybe not being in the kind of shape that I want to be in, or feeling a little bit self-conscious, or like that part of my life is something I kind of just want to put on hold. And Angela has, in a really moving, really helpful way, helped join those two things together for me, the body and soul, the inside and the outside, the physical and the spiritual. She does that in a way that very few people can. I think she's a very special person, and I'm excited for you guys to get to know her a little bit. First, I want to tell you a little bit about our first sponsor. So Third Love is this great, relatively new company, they make bras, and they use super smoothing memory foam to create bras that fit better and are more comfortable. They offer sizes from AA to G, and I've never heard of this before, they offer half cup sizes. I think this is really cool. They use women's real measurements, and they're offering you a chance right now. Here's the thing. You can try on one of their perfect 24/7 bras free for 30 days. All you pay is $2.99 for shipping. You can wear it, live in it, wash it. And if within that 30 days, if it's not your new favorite, you just return it or exchange it. So go to thirdlove.com/Shauna to get your perfect fit Third Love bra and try it for 30 days. thirdlove.com/Shauna, and you can give it a shot for 30 days. And all you have to pay is that $2.99 of shipping, and you are well on your way to your favorite new bra. Good morning. This is Shauna Nyquist. I am so excited to introduce you to my friend, Angela Davis. Angela, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I miss you, and I'm so happy to hear your voice.
I'm so happy to hear your voice. I miss you.
So Angela and I had the great fortune to travel together last year on the Belong Tour. We didn't know each other before that. And that is one of those situations where very quickly you become like sisters who love each other.
Immediately.
You're seeing each other early in the morning, late at night, backstage, on hard days, on easy days. I remember, Angela, I'm sure you remember this. It's like we took turns having a really hard time being away from our families.
Yes.
And my hard week was in LA, which is you were there with your family and I was far away from my family. And I could not pull it together. And we did not know each other very well. It was the beginning of the tour. We didn't know each other very well. And we were in, you know, so we do these tours in hockey arenas. And so quite often, like the green room is like whatever, just like a normal backstage area. And then, but then if you want to get like away from kind of the crowd, you end up and you're like, oh, I'm in the men's room of a hockey arena. I'm surrounded by urinals right now is what's happening.
Yeah.
And I just could not pull it together. It's like my brain knew I had to stop crying because we were about to go out on stage. And my heart just felt so, I just gotten off the phone with my kids, which is sometimes the worst thing to do when you're missing them. And so I like got up from the green room because I was trying to pull myself together. And I went around the corner to the men's room because it was the only place I could go. And Angela followed me there and got me some paper towel and wiped my face and put her hands on my shoulders and spoke words of life and meaning and encouragement. And I remember thinking like, God is using this woman in this most, like I needed this so badly right now. And you were helping me and healing me in such a big way.
Aw, thanks, sis. That was a sweet moment.
Well, and I think that's one of the core, like if I had to describe what is so special about you, what makes you such a special person in my life and in so many other people's lives. You have a gift of encouragement, of speaking, right? Would you say that when somebody feels lost or uncertain or not up to the challenge, you speak life and possibility into them? And I would imagine you've been doing that all your life.
Thank you. It's funny because you know, sometimes it takes someone else to kind of tell you a little bit about yourself. And I remember my dad telling me that one day. I think it was both of my parents. They were like, "You're just such an encourager. Like, you are always an encourager." And I didn't even know that that was a thing or a word or I didn't know it was something. And, throughout the years, I have had people, you know, kind of come back and tell me, "This is who you always were. You were always this person." And so now I, you know, have embraced that and feel like I walk in that, you know, to the best that I can in its fullness, you know, and just kind of, and I love it. You know, I love being that. I love being somebody's coach. I love the encouraging. I love the inspiring, you know, and I would say it on stage all the time, but to really inspire someone is to breathe life and to think that you know, that God would use you in that way. That's a privilege. That's like a humbling honor, like to think that he uses us in that way to inspire, to breathe life to people, to encourage them. And that, you know, in those moments is like, it feels pretty, pretty cool. And it's a sweet thing, you know?
Well, I love that part of how you live on stage and off stage. So let's take a step back. Before you were a coach, before you played this role in so many people's lives, you grew up in a family of athletes, and then you yourself are a very accomplished athlete. Tell us a little bit about your family and about your journey as an athlete.
So my parents were high school sweethearts. They were married. You know, they met. My mom was 15. My dad, you know, they were in high school, young, got married out of high school. They had me. My mom was 18. And my dad was drafted out of high school to play professional baseball. He was a, you know, professional baseball player, and then ended up coaching and managing in the major leagues. He, you know, was manager of the year in 2000 when he managed with the Chicago White Sox. And then he went on and managed with the New York Mets. And we were just from this, athletic family. And me, myself personally, I played soccer for 13 years and ran track and ended up choosing to go to college to run track on a full ride to Oral Roberts University. And then I ended up having a successful collegiate career that turned into a professional track and field career, and was a Nike athlete for a number of years, and at one point ranked in the top 25 in the world at 100 meters. And, traveled the world with USA on my chest, you know, running for our country, and, met my beautiful husband who was a runner as well. He was, you know, ranked 7th in the world at his event. But, that was kind of my athletic background that has a lot to do with the kind of coach that I am. Having that type of training and that type of discipline throughout a number of years has really served me in what I do now.
That's, and I totally connect with that. And I connect with it, frankly, because I see it in you. And it's really not like I grew up like I was, like I liked to dance and I was like a pom-pom girl. I definitely have absolutely no experience in that, like, extremely disciplined, very team oriented, year after year after year, kind of the shaping of your life around a particular endeavor. And I see the ways that that has created perseverance and courage. You have an intensity and a confidence that I think probably was developed along the way that I really admire. Do you feel like athletics played a part in that?
For sure. Like 100%. Absolutely. You know, I mean, I could remember it like it was yesterday, but I was on the line running the 100 meters and I was at the Olympic trials in Sacramento, California. And at the time, Marion Jones was the fastest woman in the world. And she was in my preliminary heat to make it to the semifinals. And I remember being on the line against Marion Jones in this race, literally visualizing. It was so important that you were able to visualize, you know, as an athlete. And I was visualizing the race. You kind of go through the race. And I'm literally visualizing myself beating the fastest woman in the world. And it was, there would not have been one person on this planet that could have told me that I wasn't going to beat the fastest woman in the world. And that was just the amount of confidence that you had to have. Like you just had to have it, you know? And you've heard me say on stage before, you have to see it before you see it in order to receive it. Like how important vision is, you know, how important it is to set a goal and to visualize. But, you know, I didn't win. You know, I made it to the semis, but I didn't win. But it was just, you know, speaking to that level of confidence that was just mandatory. You just had to have it. Like it just, there was no other way to compete at that level without confidence. So yes, absolutely.
I love that. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do now.
So now I, you know, they like to call me a fitness evangelist. Or a spiritual fitness coach, but I'm a coach. I teach spin classes in Los Angeles and I have, you know, clients that I train privately. You know, and I do a lot of speaking and motivating through movement, you know, so even if we're not on a spin bike, you know, maybe you'll find me, doing an event or a live event with movement. You know, I use movement to motivate and to inspire. There's something that happens, in that physicality where we are broken open and we're vulnerable and there's a vulnerability there. And in those moments of vulnerability, I've just recognized that it's an opportune time to pour in the encouragement and the motivation and begin to rewire, you know, begin to, you know, allow a restructuring to take place on the inside, and really promote the change. You know, a lot of times people come to me for this physical change. They want to look different. And, you know, it's a physical change, but really that change has to take place on the inside first. And so that's what I do. I coach, I motivate, and I inspire, with fitness as a vehicle.
And I think, you know, when, before we went on this tour together, I had heard obviously about you and about what you do, but I couldn't totally picture it. And so for people who can't totally picture it, could you walk them like, what are some of the phrases that you would say are the most central that you use, or what are the, give people just a little glimpse of if they can't totally put together what you're talking about, what is it like?
So what I like to do, you know, it depends on, it's very music driven. So I love to have like great music behind me and, you know, great beats. I think, you know, energetically music changes things. And so just with some strong beats, some really good music, visualizing a hill as we begin to march and really kind of almost like a jump march, like where you're just all of a sudden in this warrior state and you begin to visualize, you know, a hill in front of you and you start to really climb and march and use our upper body and our lower body and we're marching and we're visualizing ourselves marching up a hill and that hill is your biggest dream and you really start to see yourself achieving that and getting to that dream and maybe along the way you are passing things that don't serve you. Maybe you are climbing over worry, fear, doubt, limitations, and you're, you know, carrying somebody on your back. Maybe you're carrying a loved one on your back. Maybe you're taking somebody with you, which is so important. It's like you have these, you know, these mountaintop dreams and seeing yourself being qualified for that, you know, and really speaking to being qualified for that. And some people never get to the mountaintop and never get to enjoy the view at the top of the mountain because they're not willing to put a demand on their potential. So really getting people to believe that it's possible. If you've seen the dream, if God's allowed you to see it, then he's put it in you to be it. And really getting you to that place mentally where you begin to believe and your heart begins to open so that you can receive it. So it could be anything from reaching up and pulling down what you'd want to receive. It could be anything from pressing, which could look like a chest press, pressing out anything that doesn't serve you. It can be stomping out things that don't serve you. It could be marching and punching and just moving and squatting and clapping, but allowing this physicality and this strength to come over you, where, you know, you get to a place where, you know, all of it really is about being purpose driven, getting to a place where you live the life that you were called, created, and intended to live, and getting to that place in your body where you can do purpose. This isn't about how you look. And I say it all the time. It's not about vanity. It's about sanity. But it's you getting to a place where you are strong enough in your physical body to live the life that you were called and created to live. So, you know, life doesn't snatch you out before your before it's time, and that you're around for your babies and your babies' babies. And it's a longevity, a durability, a stability. But really, you know, it seems like things are truly activated in these moments of movement.
You are spectacular. I'm gonna rewind that and listen to that over and over again. And I think, you know, and I've told you this, Angela, but when the first time that we were in the arena together and you did this and we did it, you know, you had us standing up and marching and pressing out and pulling down and doing, I think what most women were doing was like, just like participating like they're supposed to. And I've told you this a million times, the first time you led us in something like this, I cried and cried because you were connecting some things that have been disconnected in my life for so long. You were connecting my inner, strong, passionate, vibrant life. Like the part of my life that's been, frankly, easier for me is the part with like the thinking and the feelings and the in my head and the writing. And then the part that's been really hard for me has been my body and fitness and my weight and my appearance. And I have, because that's been so hard for me, I've kind of just segmented the two. Like I just live in my brain and in my feelings and just pay no attention to the body that I walk around in all day long. And you were asking me to bring those things together. And it's, it felt really possible. It felt really scary and beautiful in the best possible way. And it brought up a lot of things that have been hard for a long time. And it's like something kind of broke through the darkness just for a second. Is that something that you hear from people often?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is a breaking does happen. And it's almost like a breakthrough, you know, it's a breaking and a breakthrough and breaking through, you know, these limitations that, you know, we've allowed to hover over us. It's literally breaking through those limitations. And, you know, you can walk in with this ceiling and break through that, and that then becomes the ground floor to the next level, you know, or it's like a literal breaking open and breaking off, or chains breaking, like the bondage and all of those things that have tried to hold us back and prohibit us from being what we were created to be. There's a breaking that happens, a breaking, a break open, a breakthrough, all of that that happens. And a lot of times with that is the tears and the release, you know, and just the freedom of that, like kind of, you know, the release of that, like all of that that I've been holding on to me and carrying that I did not need to carry, that I was never even intended to carry. Like, you know, is it just the spiritual weight? Is it the physical weight? Like what, all of this that I'm carrying that I wasn't even intended to carry? And the break of that does, you know, it is tears, you know, it's all of it. It's the tears, the snot, the release, the scream, the exhale, you know, it's all of that. It's all of it.
So one of the things that I think is particularly interesting about what you do is you are people call you a fitness evangelist. You're using God's word. You're using sections of scripture. You're using biblical themes. You're using a squarely Christian perspective, language about prayer, about God's presence, about healing, but you're using it in an environment that's not a religious environment. Has that been something that people have had questions about or been critical of? Or how do people receive that?
You know, it's so funny because when, you know, I'm in LA, you know, I'm in the middle of, you know, I'm in Hollywood, you know, like West Hollywood, technically. I live in Beverly Hills, but you know, the studio I train out of is in West Hollywood, but it just is a mecca, you know, for, you know, our entertainment industry. And I am in the middle of this, and one of the most popular, thriving, you know, fitness revolutions, you know, at the studio that I'm at. And I remember the first time the nudge came to be bolder in what I was saying. And I remember that little wrestle and that little, like, seriously? Like, you want me to say, seriously? You want me to say that? You know, like, just listening to the spirit and, like, really? You want me to throw that out? And I remember the first couple times when I didn't and what that felt like. And then I remembered when I couldn't not anymore and the freedom that happened when I did. And I will just, yeah, there could have possibly been some criticism and it's not for everyone. And, you know, sure. But for me, what meant more is for me to honor the Father. That just meant more to me than any chatter of criticism. It just didn't compare. It didn't compare to what it felt like to honor. It didn't compare to what it felt like to be obedient. It just didn't matter. Like, it just, I didn't care. You know, I just wanted to do what I was called, created, and intended to do. How could I coach someone else to do what they were called, created, and intended to do if I'm not? And there just couldn't be, anything hypocritical. I couldn't not walk the walk that I was talking. It didn't match. And so sure, there probably was, and that was a while back, but it just didn't matter. And right now I think that, you know, it's in a season where I'm definitely, I can definitely appreciate the fruits of that obedience.
I think you're talking about a couple of really important things. And that first thing that obedience, the sense of, what it feels like to live in an obedient way is so much more valuable than other people's opinions about what you're doing. So it sort of builds a foundation in you of the good feeling, that sense of connectedness and foundation that comes from living in an obedient way tends to take down the ambient volume right around you. Those aren't the voices you're listening for. You're listening for God's voice in your life. And when you're hearing that in a loud way, the other voices are quieter. I also think, and I would imagine you've experienced this, people are hungry for the depth of truth that God's word offers, even if that's not something they think. If they have some defenses about that, which I totally understand, when they start to hear the principles of God's love, of what it means to walk with him, of what it means to live according to his purposes, our hearts are naturally drawn toward that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just what it is. It's what it is. It's the truth that'll set you free. You know, living a life in bondage and hearing the truth, you recognize it and you just want more of it. You just want more of it. And you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's just the truth. It's the truth when you just, and I think we all are, and in this town as well, you know, in Hollywood, in Los Angeles, California, just, you know, hungry, hungry, hungry for the truth, desperate for the truth.
There's a story that I'm hoping you remember because I actually think about it all the time. We were right at the end of the tour and we were facing, we had to make a couple difficult decisions as a team and they were not particularly popular and we were getting a little bit of criticism and we were talking together about like, how do you handle that stuff? How do you filter it? And you told us a story about when your dad first came to Chicago to manage the White Sox. Do you know the story I'm talking about?
I think so.
About reading the paper?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Can you tell that story? That really was a helpful image for me.
He managed the Chicago White Sox for a number of years. And the mistake that he made the first year was that because he was a newspaper reader anyway. So he just carried that tradition, that morning tradition into, you know, his stint as, you know, starting as a manager. And what would happen was he would start to read the press, and the press is brutal, anywhere you are, but you know, it could really beat you up. And then there are times where it can really, you know, stroke your ego. And what he realized in that moment was the good nor the bad served him as manager of the Chicago White Sox, that he couldn't listen to the praise or the criticism and do the job that he was called to do. And so he made a decision to shut that out and to stay focused and really only listen to that one. And that is something that he taught me, was not to, you know, listen to the good or the bad, but just to keep my ear open for what the Father is saying. And I think that's some of the best advice he ever gave me.
I think you shared that with us in a moment where we were very much trying to weigh, yeah, the people who loved what we had decided to do, the people who hated what we decided to do. And the phrase that you used, you told us that story about your dad, which, and you had said, you know, I'm a Chicagoan, obviously, and I know you had said that maybe in other cities it was okay to read the paper, but the Chicago press is particularly nasty and opinionated. And I know, yeah. I know that to be true about our fine city, but you said what he taught me to do was not to listen to the praise, not to listen to the criticism, but that my job is to run a clean race.
Yes.
And that, I told Aaron that we talk about that now from time to time. A friend of mine was in a really tricky situation and I told him that story. And so now he and I text each other, hey, I ran a clean race on this one. I didn't let so-and-so's criticism or so-and-so's congratulation. I stayed true to my vision, to what God asked me to do. I ran a clean race.
Yes. I mean, it's so valuable. It is, like I said, one of the best lessons that my father, it was one of the best things that he could ever, and even my brother, you know, I have a brother who has this super successful clothing line. And, you know, there's an article on TMZ about me today, you know, like literally on today, this very day that you and I are speaking. But it's like just, you know, not even listening. And I think that's what kept me in my lane right now. And in those early years when there could have been some criticism, I didn't even put myself in a position to be available for it. I really didn't ever put myself in a position. And even on for us, you know, in that tour, I didn't ever look at the Facebook page. Wouldn't have even known how to locate it. You know what I mean? Or the Twitter. I didn't even do it. I never even dove in it. I couldn't even tell you the general consensus of what we did last fall.
And I think that's a good example for me. I think, I tend to be, that's not my best thing. I get like, well, I should know certainly. And if someone has some criticism for me, it's probably true. And I probably need to listen. And I probably need to, you know, read every bad Amazon review just because, and it's not good for me and it doesn't help me do better work. And you're a good example to me in that. Sponsor is a company that I'm really excited about. I don't know if you have that feeling. I often have this feeling where your closet is packed, but you don't have anything to wear. And they say that actually most of us only wear 20% of what's hanging in our closet or in our dresser. And so Cladwell is on a mission to help us look our best, save time, and live simply. I love that idea, especially the part about living simply. So every morning you get an outfit recommendation from the clothing that you own and the weather in your location. So you can sort of bypass that whole, what am I gonna wear? I have a million options and nothing works kind of meltdown. So what happens is as you work with them with each passing day, you get more insight into what you wear and what you don't so you can get rid of the things you don't need and have a simple closet you actually love. So I am a huge fan. This is a really cool thing. So I would love to invite you to check out their app and their mission. And it's cladwell.com/Shauna. So they help you use what you already have, figure out what you love, what really works for you so that you can look your best, save time, and live simply. cladwell.com/Shauna. So one thing we haven't talked about yet is you and I are both moms of boys. Tell us a little bit about your boys.
So I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. Lorenzo is my 8-year-old. Edward is my 10-year-old. And they're just beautiful, 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 sweet, 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 sweet boys that keep me accountable. And it's just been, you know, as most moms would say, just the greatest joy of my life is to be their mom. I just feel, you know, like, man, like I get to do this with you. You know, I have one that just signed on with LAFC, which is like a feeder system to the LA. It's a professional soccer team, LAFC, but he is like this extraordinary soccer player. He's 10 years old. And then I have this 8-year-old who I swear to you in 2 years is going to be doing like the comedy clubs on the Sunset Strip. Like, he's so funny. I'm like, who are you? Like, what are you doing? And where do you get this material? How are you even this person right now? Like, he just is so funny. But it's just, it's cool. You know, we have some fun travels set up this summer. I feel, you know, like I'm really trying to use different experiences as teachers and, you know, take them different places. So it's interesting, you know, really it's a navigation, you know, with boys and, I don't know, but it's fun.
I feel like I knew I wanted to be a parent. I knew it would be valuable and meaningful and all those things. I don't think I really understood how much fun it would be and how much I would genuinely enjoy these little people and their personalities. And I feel like our kids, you know, so my oldest is 10 and then my youngest is 5, almost 6. But this age, it's kind of a dream, right?
They're so cool.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, how are you guys so cool? Like, they're just like, it is a dream and they're cool. And I love that they are at the age where we can just like roll out, you know, like we're running errands and now we're falling through our favorite restaurant for dinner. And it's not like it, like they can kind of we can just kind of fall in the pocket, you know, and it just, I don't know. It's nice. It's a good rhythm. It's a good flow right now.
I have a friend who has 4, 2 and newborn. And I keep telling her, like, listen, like I know what your life is like right now, but imagine this world. I don't bring anything with me when we go places.
Right?
I don't bring a diaper. I don't bring a little spoon.
Yeah. Oh my God. All that stuff we'd have to bring. I remember bagging that bag. Yeah. You could just roll out.
It's so like, fun.
It's the best. The best.
Okay. So, and I, again, this is a conversation you and I have had privately, but I think I'm probably not the only person who wants to know about this stuff. So, and I've said this, fitness is my worst thing. It's like, there are so many hard things in life that I don't have trouble getting my mind around or getting out the door for. Like I can, you know, do a decent amount of things in my life, and fitness on a regular basis is like, it's like my hardest thing. What advice do you give to people, or would you give to someone like me who has just not really found her jam in the whole like fitness part of life, but wants to?
But wants to. It takes, you know, one day at a time, and really just, you know, making a decision to just begin to step, you know, just begin to put one foot in front of the other. And if it means, you know, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to walk around the block, or if, you know, I'm going to hop on the treadmill, or I'm going to literally put one foot in front of the other and just move, just commit to move, you know. And if you just start with, you know, 10 minutes a day, even 5 minutes a day, like just something where you just begin to move, and you will find that you will eventually find what works for you. And then you'll get to a place where you rely on it and you enjoy it and you look forward to it. Why? Because you begin to see how you feel and how good you feel because you did it. And you know, take advantage of that time. Like if, you know, some people wake up early and they'll pray, or they'll wake up early and they, you know, meditate, or they, you know, wake up early and they read. Well, what if you had your book on tape, or on your, you know, where it was on your phone, where you can listen to your book and you can move at the same time, or you can take that prayer time or that meditation time and you could be moving while doing it, and, you know, incorporate that and really, you know, allow that to be a useful time. But it just starts with starting, you know, and it sounds like I wish there was something else, but it starts with starting. Like you just have to start. You have to trust that it will, that you will reap the benefits of it. And the benefits of it are worth it. They're worth it. They are worth it. You will feel better. You will feel more energized. You know, you will feel stronger in your own body. And it feels great. Clothes fit different. Things just, it just feels good. But the hardest thing is to start. The hardest thing is to just start. And, I just encourage anyone listening that's having a hard time starting to just start, you know, even if it's like getting up from exactly where you're sitting right now. And while you're listening to us, you're squatting, or you're doing bicep curls, or you're, you know, doing chest press or shoulder press, or, you know, hands all the way above your head and dropping, you know, bending at the elbows for a tricep, you know, just start to move, just start to move, start to move, start to move, and give yourself, you know, 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day. If you can do more than that, do more than that, but just make a decision to do it. You know, we make choices all day, and by the end of the day, we are the total sum of those choices. Choose today that I will move because I know that it's good for me, and believe and trust that that interest and love will come. It'll come, and then you'll find something cool to do, or maybe you'll get, you know, call a friend and say, listen, can you hold me accountable? Can we do this together? You know, I tell the definition all the time that my mom taught me about accountability, accounting to your own ability. So even if that person isn't available, you account to your own ability. Can you say to yourself, self, I know that there's more. I know that I can be stronger, and I'm going to hold myself accountable and just start to move a couple minutes a day, 7 minutes a day, even, you know, is, is something, it's important. It's really, really just an important part of our life. And the hardest part is just to start. But I encourage you to start. I encourage you to start. Just step, march in place, you know, like get down on the floor and do some sit-ups and, you know, really begin to add to that. And it'll happen. It does. It just does. It always does.
I feel like, and I always tell you this, but when you talk to me about this, I feel like I could do anything, you know, like we always said when we were on tour, like, can Angela come to my house this week? And then maybe this week we'll, like, she and I will figure this stuff out together. And we also got into this thing on tour where if any of us made any remotely healthful choice in any area, we'd be like, Angela, hey, guess what I did is I just took the stairs like half a flight. So I'm basically, we're like the same now. Or I just totally had water instead of a Coke. So, you know, same, same.
Same. I love it.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes left. And I just want to ask you a couple questions that I ask every guest. We won't do every single one, but I'm going to ask you a question about a spiritual practice, a couple book questions, and then a couple questions about meals. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So what's one spiritual practice of any kind, one spiritual practice that's helping you or healing you in this season?
Ooh, a spiritual practice that is helping me. Forgiveness. And not taking offense, being so offended, you know, not taking it so personal.
What does that look like? What advice would you give someone who wants to practice forgiveness in a deeper way?
And I've said the analogy from stage before, but compassion trumps offense. And just finding a way to be compassionate. We look at things that, you know, someone may have done or someone may have wronged us, and we get so offended. We get so offended and make it all about us, how that made us feel, But if that can in any way be shifted, and to maybe the hurt that person feels, you know, hurting people hurt people or broken people, you know, it just, and kind of shift that to compassion. And to me, it's been just an extraordinarily freeing concept for me to acknowledge that, that didn't make me feel great, but then shifting it to a state of compassion. It's for me, there's freedom in that.
I think that's absolutely true. I just had a conversation. Another podcast guest a couple of weeks ago was talking about almost like the brain chemistry of compassion, that you can train your brain the same way you can train your body. And when something happens that offends us and we approach it with compassion as opposed to judgment, your brain actually changes, and that you can train yourself to be a person who more and more often responds with compassion instead of judgment. I think that would change so much about our lives.
So much. It is a game changer, for sure. It's a game changer.
So now we'll talk just for a minute about books. What is a book that you have loved in your life?
I just read this book a couple days ago, and it's a tiny book. It's a quick book, but I am obsessed. It's called This Is Water. Have you read This Is Water?
No, tell me about it. I'm writing it down.
It's called This Is Water, and I'm reading the cover. It says, some thoughts delivered on a significant occasion about living a compassionate life by David Foster Wallace. And it was basically, a commencement, address that David Foster Wallace delivered in 2005, and it was turned into a book, and it is absolutely extraordinary. It is extraordinary, and it's small and it's quick, and you can go through it, and then you'll want to go through it again, and you'll want to go through it again. But it is just, this is going to be kind of a go-to for me, and something that I recommend to a lot of people, but it's incredible.
Awesome. And I'm, you know, I love him generally and have loved lots of the stuff he's done, but I haven't read that one. I'm very excited to. Is there a book that you give to everyone?
I haven't. I mean, it's because of what I do and because I'll bring books into my class and I'll read, you know, passages from books or different things. People often ask me for a book referral, and it will always kind of just be what I'm reading. And because I just read this one, literally on the plane to Mexico City, I just got back from Mexico City 2 days ago. Like, this is the book that I would be talking about. And actually, yesterday in class and today in class, I brought this book into class. So it's always, there's never like one particular book, but it just, because I am because what I do, I have to stay full and, you know, in order to give, you have to stay full. And so I'm constantly, you know, looking to stay full. And so I'm, you know, diving in books here and there all the time. And so it's always a matter of just kind of what it happens to be at that time. My dad will, you know, sometimes send me things from like, you remember Miles Monroe?
Yeah.
So he, you know, there's this book called Understanding Your Potential. And he, you know, he would send me stuff from that, but I get stuff, you know, here and there sent to me from my parents a lot of times, and then it'll allow me to further go into that book. And then that kind of ends up being the book that I, you know, kind of refer. I don't have one particular, it changes for me.
I'm the same way. I get really into something and I'll talk about that book everywhere I go. And then 6 weeks later, it's another book that I am, you know, yeah. And so I cycle through things. And if you happen to see me in that 6 weeks, you'll hear me talk about it 15 different times.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about meals. Let's say somehow, you know, that this is your last supper. Where would it be? Who would be there? And what would you eat?
Woo! I would probably be in Northern California, where my parents live, surrounded by all of my family, from my children, my husband, my mom, dad, my siblings, their spouses, like everyone. And beautiful, like, sunset. My parents live on 5 acres. They have this gorgeous property in Northern Cal with these gorgeous views, probably eating outside, enjoying the sunset, and we would be enjoying a pot of gumbo.
Really? All right. Do you make gumbo? Does your mom make gumbo?
My mom makes it. My grandma makes it. And it just is everything. It's everything. But just a good, you know, they're from Louisiana, but just like, their gumbo is life. It is life, with some potato salad on the side. So you put the gumbo over rice, and then you have potato salad on the side, and you have a soft roll with it, and, you know, like a sparkling water, and it's just everything. And you have those crab legs in there that you break open, and you suck that meat out, and it's, you know, the shrimp and then gooey sausage and the chicken and all the seasonings, and it's just the best.
That sounds heavenly. That sounds fantastic. And you are actually the second podcast guest to bring up potato salad. It's like a thing that people have strong feelings about. I do definitely have strong feelings about potato salad. So what's one thing in your life, what's one kind of food or recipe or anything that you would love to learn to make?
I would love to make that, because my husband loves it. My kids love it, but we don't get it unless my mom comes to town or we go to my grandma. You know, we don't get it unless we just very special occasions. Like, I would love to be able to make it. It's a whole thing. It's like the roux and the this, and it's just a thing, and it can go bad. Like, it can go extremely bad. Like, it just, so it, to really get the rhythm of it and to figure out how to do it, and just to be able to make a gigantic pot of gumbo that people come in for, and that moving line through the kitchen. Like, I would love to be the master of that.
I feel like I know you well enough to know that you can absolutely master that. I feel like of all the things that you have put your mind to, and like I can cook, and I know you can make that gumbo. I promise you can.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Encouragement.
Okay, just one last question. What five things are always in your fridge or pantry?
Always in my pantry, nuts, almond butter, a chip. I need a chip.
Yep.
In my fridge, there's always some sort of kale, spinachy, some green stuff, fruit, and there's always some chocolate on the back end of somewhere.
There's like one little shelf that has a little bit of chocolate in it.
Always some chocolate.
Awesome. Angela, it has been such a treat to talk with you. I always love catching up with you. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
You're so welcome. Thank you. It's been so fun. I miss you. I love you. Thank you.
I miss you and I love you too. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Shauna Nyquist podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. And for more Relevant Podcast Network shows, check out the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com.